I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed three big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, "John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote." I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff, acuff.me/speaking. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes to Goal podcast. If you're new around here, I'm a late bloomer who discovered the power of goals in his mid-30s. Now I'm on a furious mission to create the accelerators I wish I had in my 20s. I'm your host, John Acuff, and today we're talking about figuring out what you want. Have you ever frozen when someone says, "Hey, what's your big dream? If you could do anything, if you won $5 million in the lottery or $10 million in the lottery, what would you do? What's your wild goal? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? What do you want?" Have you ever frozen when someone asks that question and you feel like, "Ooh, I should have an answer to that question. I should know exactly what I want to do." If you've ever locked up when you've thought about that, you're in the right place. Those questions sound fun on the surface, but they can be very difficult for people to answer, especially if you have a lot of different goals bouncing around your head. So today, we're going to talk about getting to the bottom of what you really want. Here's the deal. We all want to finish our goals. That's what we're all aiming for, right? I mean, you wouldn't be listening to a podcast called All It Takes Is a Goal if you were casual about goals. I mean, we all want to make it across the finish line and accomplish the things we care about, which is crazy that only 92% of all New Year's resolutions fail. It's only 92%. I mean, what's the big deal? What? That means only 8% actually succeed. That was a study done by the University of Scranton. And every time I mention it, I think of The Office. But 92% of all New Year's resolutions fail. We all start these goals, but we don't finish them. Why does that happen? So I've asked thousands of people that very question, and there were three statements that I kept seeing again and again and again in their answers. When I'd ask people, "Why didn't your goal finish? Why was it hard to finish?" three things kept coming up. Here's what they were. Number one, "I don't know what I want to do. I just don't know. I don't know what I actually want to do. I don't know what my goal is." Number two, "I have too many goals. I have too many things I'm into." And number three, "The goal is too complicated. It's just simply too complicated." Have you ever run into any of those obstacles? Are any of those sounding familiar? I know I have. I've hit every single one of those walls. And as much as I'd like to say that they're very difficult to figure out, because then I can kind of sit safely back in my comfort zone, they're really not. The majority of your obstacles are just different varieties of fear. So in this episode, we're going to break down that first one. "I don't know what I want to do." Do you know what that is? What that really is? That is the fear of desire. It's just the fear of desire. Some of you listening right now were never told or taught that you get to have desires, that it was not only okay to have desires, but it was healthy to have desires. There was hope there. There was passion there. There was creativity there, that it was good for you to have things you wanted and pursued. And right now you feel a little kind of nervous just hearing me talk about desire. Like you feel like an old parent or an old teacher or somebody's going to say, it's selfish to have things you want to do. It's selfish to have desires. So I want us to do a quick exercise, like a mental exercise. I just want you to think about finishing this sentence. I want blank. So simple sentence. I want blank. I want you to write down a few statements when you're near a piece of paper. Maybe you're in your car right now. Maybe you're at the gym. I want you to write down a few statements, a few want statements. And then I want you to listen if you automatically justify or explain the desire. So for example, maybe you'd say, I want a beach house. I want a beach house. Like when I allow myself to dream, when I allow myself to have a desire, man, I would love to have a beach house. Are you able to let that be a complete sentence? Or do you feel the pressure to say, I want a beach house because then we could host Thanksgiving there and it could be a place that my extended family who can't afford a beach house could use, and we could also use it as a rental property, so it would be a wise investment. All of those things might be true. But why can't you just say, I want a beach house? In this story, I want a beach house. Who are you explaining or justifying that desire to? Maybe you'd say, I want to look great in a pair of jeans. Like maybe that's your thing. Like you have a fitness goal and you have a favorite pair of jeans that you want to rock again, or you want to look good at the neighborhood pool. Awesome. But when you say that sentence, do you add to it? Instead of just saying what you want, do you end up explaining, I want to look great in a pair of jeans, which I know is a vain goal and silly, but I also want to show my kids a good example of what it looks like to be healthy and make good food choices. What? Who told you that looking great in a pair of jeans wasn't a good enough goal? Like anytime you say, I know it's weird, I know it's silly, I know it's vain, I know I shouldn't do it, you're using disclaimers around your goal. I think you should pause for a second and go, what am I doing right now? What's really going on? Or maybe you'd say, I want to sell 10,000 copies of my book. Maybe that's what you're doing right now. You're working on a book. You're writing a book right now. And you say, I want to sell 10,000 copies of my book. Amazing. That's a fantastic goal. I mean, imagine 10,000 people reading words you wrote, ideas you had, and then were brave enough to put on a piece of paper. But then is the next thing you say, I want to sell 10,000 copies of my book, which I know is impossible. I mean, most books sell less than 500 copies, and there are so many books published every year, and I don't even know 10,000 people, so it's probably a little far-fetched. It might take me my entire life, and even if I only sold 100 copies, I'd be happy. Really, just changing one life would be enough. I think you should listen if you start using disclaimers. I don't think it's impossible for you to sell 10,000 copies of your book. I don't think that's far-fetched at all. You shouldn't either. You can figure that goal out. The words you tell yourself after you write down a goal are very informative. The way I like to say it is every reaction is an education. Every reaction is an education. How you react to the goal says a lot about what you really believe about yourself. So I've got the fear of desire. I do. I had like this one's personal to me, and I have a very specific one that I'm going to tell you right now, because if I ask you to do something challenging, like say something you want, I should as well. I should share that. I want a Porsche 911. I do. There it is. Out loud on a podcast episode. I've wanted that for decades. That's not a new desire, but it's one I've talked myself out of time and time again. I even put it in my new book. I tried to justify that I'm really not an object guy. I don't need a car like that. I told the story about the poster. If you've read my new book, All It Takes Is a Goal, you can get it anywhere books are sold. But I had two interactions with this particular fear last summer that really rocked me. The first was really unexpected, but really instructive. So the first kind of story that happened for me last summer was we were in the mountains. We were staying in the mountains outside of Boone, North Carolina, and I was picking up some big sticks in the driveway of the place we were staying. They were in the way of our car, so I was picking up some big sticks, and all of a sudden, I heard this roar of like a sports car. And I can recognize it because where we live in Franklin, we live in a town called Franklin, which is just 20 minutes south of Nashville. There's beautiful country roads and people bring their exotic cars out there to drive, and you can hear them from afar. You can hear them changing gears. It's the best sound on the planet. And you try to guess like, is that a McLaren? What is that? Is that a Ferrari? But I heard the sound of sports cars, and it was this rumble. And all of a sudden, a 9/11 went by the driveway, and then a second one, and then a third one, and then a fourth one. And it was a group of 9/11 owners all driving together in these mountain roads. And I immediately, without thinking about it, without even thinking about it, threw the sticks down, had a huge bundle of sticks, threw them down, and I sprinted down the driveway and I ran after them to take photos. Like, I was running next to them like a five-year-old who had seen Barney for the first time. That's a relevant reference, by the way. I just busted out Barney. I don't know what the kids are watching these days. I know it's not, maybe is it Paw Patrol? I don't even know. I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old. I'm out of the game. I am. I'm just out of the little kid game. But I ran down the street, took a bunch of photos, and I came back like 15 minutes later, and my wife was like, where were you? And I was like, oh my gosh, I just saw a bunch of 9/11s. And I paused for a moment and thought, you should pay attention to things that make you act like a little kid. Like, if you have a full body little kid joy experience and reaction to something, you should pay attention to that. If you go on some trip and have that reaction, if you finish some project and have that reaction, you should pay attention. I hadn't planned to drop everything I was doing and run down the street taking photos of these cars. Like, I probably look like a wild person. But I was so overwhelmed with joy at hearing them, seeing them, imagining, like, oh, that'd be so fun. Imagine if you were in a club and you were driving around the mountains. That was the first experience I had last summer that made me go, I wonder. The second was a conversation I had with my wife. My wife and I have been talking about getting a 911 for years. It's a running conversation. And 5 years ago, I actually bet my oldest daughter $100 that when I dropped her off at college, I'd have a Porsche 911. It felt like a safe bet. I was saying in half a decade, I will have made that goal happen. Do you know what was one of the last things I did when I dropped her off at college for her freshman year? I handed her $100. I didn't do the goal. I kept my word, but I didn't do the goal. Every time Jenny and I have talked about getting one, she has said to me, I think you'd be an anxious mess in that car. Like, you'd be so worried about a teenager hitting you or someone rear-ending you in traffic. You'd park so far away from everything. Like, you'd park a mile away from the grocery store so no one could park next to you. You'd never be able to relax with that car. And you know what? She was right. I would do all those things. I'd be stressed out. I'm a high-stress person. I'm a very anxious person by nature. And that would probably make me feel very stressed out. But then one day while I was thinking about that conversation, I pulled the thread on that desire a little bit. So if I won't buy a Porsche 911 because I'm afraid, then I'm letting fear tell me what kind of car I can drive. I'm essentially saying to my anxiety, hey, what kind of car do you think I can handle? What kind of car do you think I'm capable of? And then fear is saying, you know what? I'll allow you to drive a VW. That's about where you top out. That's the car I've picked out for you. Little VW. You can't handle anything different from that. Oof, that hit me pretty hard. So now fear is in charge of my car purchases. Okay, so fear gets to pick out the car. I'm not okay with that. I'm not. Like, I don't want fear to pick out my car. I don't like that one bit. And then I started to wonder, here's the big question I wondered, what other decisions have I outsourced to fear? What other decisions? Is fear in charge of my business? Do I desire a bigger business, a more successful platform, a wider audience? But fear is telling me, whoa, whoa, whoa. If you grow any bigger, you wouldn't be able to handle the pressure. You better stay small. You better pull back from new opportunities because you'd be too stressed out. Why don't we keep this thing? Why don't we play it safe? Why don't we keep it this size? I don't want fear picking up my car, and I certainly don't want it setting a limit on the size of my career. That's what's fun about dealing with this particular fear. You start out with a small one, like what kind of car you drive. And if you're brave, you'll find yourself dealing with bigger fears. I think there's at least a half dozen big areas of my life that I've outsourced to fear without even knowing. So how about you? What decisions have you outsourced to fear? Do you have a fear of desire? If you do, I encourage you to practice a small desire this week. Try a few easy statements. I want blank. Just write out a few. Nothing massive. It doesn't have to be huge. I always tell people start small when it comes to new goals. You don't have to say, I want to own my own business, or I want to lose 100 pounds, or I want to travel to 25 countries. Start with something small like, I want to spend 15 minutes by myself on a quiet walk. That might not seem like a lot, but if you've got mom guilt in the mix, because some of you right now are listening, like our moms, spending a few minutes on yourself might feel like a big deal, right? So will I ever get a Porsche 911? I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I don't think that's the point. The point for me was learning to not let fear steer my ship. One of my soundtracks is Fear Gets a Voice, Not a Vote. Fear Gets a Voice, Not a Vote. What does that mean? It means I'm going to listen to it. I disagree with people when they say you should ignore your fears, shove them down. Like, no. Fear is very educational. Fear can be very helpful. It can tell you a lot of things you need to know. It has a voice. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to process it. You don't get to be fully self-aware if you deny your fears. But I'm not going to give it a vote. I'm not going to sit it at the head of the table and give it a gavel and let it say, this is what we're doing. We've decided to do this. Fear gets a voice, not a vote. And if you've been giving fear the vote for your desires, be careful. I think you need to pay attention to that and start asking some good questions. Thanks for listening to today's episode. We'll put all the links in the show notes as always. And this was not sponsored by Porsche. I mean, if they want to sponsor this podcast, by all means, slide into those DMs, whatever that means. But yes, definitely, if Porsche is listening to this right now, and like, we could make that happen. We would love to have an author. Like, if you want to start some official author program where you just give, I was going to say young, but I'm 48. So if you want to give middle-aged authors 911s and I'll write about, whatever, we can figure something out. But thank you for reviewing my podcast. The reviews you write are super encouraging. Here's one I saw recently from Heather. She said, John is the perfect blend of fun and practical. Love this podcast. And the book, All It Takes Is a Goal, is even better. Thank you so much for writing that, Heather. I really appreciate the reviews you guys are writing. Make sure you subscribe or follow or whatever it is the kids are saying these days. And please write a review. I'll see you next week. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast.
I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed three big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote. I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff.me/speaking.